Zesty makes some awesome creamy dips and spreads from fresh vegetables, seeds, and spices. Our products are shelf stable, so the easiest way to explain them would be an elevated salsa, but made from curry powder and zucchini, and then some red bell peppers with some apple cider vinegar, and then a spiced mango. So something to indulge on without the high calorie count or anything that would make you feel guilty after you finish the whole jar. But most part that I borrow from my heritage is about the way the products are made. So we don't use any preservatives. We don't process them overly. Even the vegetables that are put in are fresh. So yes, it's still a convenient way. It comes in a packaged product form, but at the same time, when you eat it, you wouldn't feel like it wasn't made fresh.
Hi everyone, Grace here, the Startup CPG editor, and we are back with another Founder Friday bonus episode, this week featuring Growy Foods. Growy Foods has been with our community since the very beginning back in 2020. They make delicious all-occasion dips and spreads from real plant-based ingredients like fresh veggies, sunflower seeds, and spices, and they are delicious. So, hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to the Startup CPG podcast. My name is Grace. I'm here with another episode of the Founder Friday bonuses. We're really excited to be featuring Aman and his brand Growy Foods today. Many members of the Startup CPG team are big fans of Growy Foods and their delicious plant-based dips and spreads, but I will let Aman introduce himself more eloquently.
Hey everyone, graciously explained. I'm founder of Growy Foods. We make some awesome creamy dips and spreads from fresh vegetables, seeds, and spices. Our products are shelf stable, so the easiest way to explain them would be an elevated salsa, but made from curry powder and zucchini, and then some red bell peppers with some apple cider vinegar, and then a spiced mango. So something to indulge on without the high calorie count or anything that would make you feel guilty after you finish the whole jar.
Yeah, I haven't tried all of them, but I've tried the red pepper dip and it is, in fact, delicious. So highly recommend to anyone listening here. But so, Aman, I'd love to hear just to start, why did you found Growy Foods? What sort of inspired this idea and your mission? And yeah, just give us the founder story.
Of course, yeah. I'm originally actually from India and I've grown up eating vegetarian foods for the majority of my life. Moving to the US, I kind of had a little bit of difficult onboarding trying to eat vegetarian every day. So I briefly switched over to like eating meat and stuff, but then wasn't like the best way to function for myself. So, you know, I switched to then veganism and all of those products. But then, hey, I was like, why am I going through this journey? Like, it turns out the only thing that keeps you healthy and feeling good in a way, at least as a vegetarian, is when you cook products fresh and with just like you would make in your kitchen at home. And I always wanted to have a product that I could indulge on like that. So borrowing a little bit from the flavors from, you know, India, like the curry flavors from India. But most part that I borrow from my heritage is about the way the products are made. So we don't use any preservatives. We don't process them overly. Even the vegetables that are put in are fresh. So yes, it's still a convenient way. It comes in a packaged product form, but at the same time, when you eat it, you wouldn't feel like it wasn't made fresh. And that's like the whole thing about Growy. Whatever you eat, it's almost like you just made it in your kitchen. There wouldn't be overly processed products. There would be things you would actually feel good about eating, like apple cider vinegar. Even our starches are super healthy. And like we use this gum called acacia gum and acacia fiber. Traditionally in India, it's used to regulate your body temperatures in the wintertime. So even to that minute detail, I've paid attention, like whatever that goes in your mouth has to promote health. And that's kind of like the whole thing about our dips as an indulgent, healthy product is. Yeah, I've always wanted to be in food, and with a brief stint in the distribution industry before I dive into the brand building thing, that's how the transition was.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's definitely a common sort of issue people have when they decide they want to be eating plant-based or vegetarian or vegan or anything, is you are going to the store and you see like, oh, that's plant-based. And then you go and look at the ingredient and you're like, what is this random thing that like a gum with another start? You know, like it's all very confusing.
Yeah, so it is.
I love that you can like understand every ingredient really that's in Growy's dip. So once you sort of came up with this idea, that you wanted to create this sort of indulgent plant-based dip that really had ingredients that were fresh and really let the vegetables shine. What was your sort of first step when you were like, okay, I want to create this thing? How did you get started?
Oh my God. I am like the most inexperienced founder ever. I thought like, I'll get the product out in like 2 months. No problem. It took us like almost a year or something change in the months. But the process, I think common for every new CPG founder. I had some great, great, great mentors too in the way, like Rachel from Revival Foods. And just like even Patricia was super helpful along the way. We connected early on. But the process early on was finding a chef and sort of, I don't even know, like I went to manufacturers thinking, oh, they do all the work. We just have to pay them. I was like, oh, can you create a recipe? He's like, no, that's what you do. So we started with the chef, sort of went in thinking everything would be, you know, I can just buy off the vegetables from, I don't know, wholesale supplier and that's what it, and then no, that's not how it works. And then connected with a co-packer. The good and bad thing for us was early on, I connected with a co-packer thinking, because I had no food skills like as such, right? No culinary skills. I can tell what tastes great. I can tell the nutrition side of it. But when it comes to actual cooking, nah, that's not me. So I knew that I won't be able to do this in like a commercial kitchen. We started off with a co-packer. It was very expensive in the beginning just because at smaller scales, it was always the chicken and egg problem, distribution, or like I would say the distributor, even the manufacturer, like, do you have distribution? And like, no, distributors like, do you have stores? No. And the stores like, do you have distributors? Like, But finally, I think that's a common thing for every founder. You start off with an expensive run. That's what happened. We wasted a bunch of product because we didn't know what we were doing. Thankfully, after a couple of iterations, great mentors. I really have to point out how monumental Startup CPG has been for me, just because I joined when, you know, there was this platform, Audio, even forgot the name of that, when Startup CPG was on that platform. They used to do like conferences and stuff.
Oh, Clubhouse?
Yes.
Yes.
That's how I found Startup CPG. Ever since, this has been like my mentor community. Like the response rate is so high. You guys have done such a great job to like hold the community together. So yeah, like super, super honorable mention to Startup CPG for helping in the process. And yeah, now here we are distributing on both coasts so far. Still in the growth stage, still trying to tread very carefully as a small brand, making a lot of changes just because there's so much that I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that's such a common thing. I think I've said this in the last interview I did, but I genuinely don't know if I've talked to a founder who's been like, yeah, when I started my brand, I knew everything and I was ready to go and I did everything right. You know, everybody has a story where they messed up in the beginning and continue to get things wrong and figure it out as they go. And so I think it's always useful for people to hear that and be reminded that it happens to everybody.
It's the best thing about meeting other founders. Kind of like, oh, you're not the only one who is like making these F-ups.
Absolutely. And sort of in that vein, how did you sort of take the learnings from these F-ups, if you will, and sort of propel them forward? So you weren't just like, well, that was a screw up and beat yourself up. But how do you actually take that learning and keep going forward?
I think the biggest thing was, I can tell you from the little few incidents I've had, again, I tread very carefully in terms of distribution. For example, like we launched, we're trying to make a flavor change. And I won't say until that's finalized. But the one thing that really helped me, and if anybody else could use this, is also like whenever we launch a flavor profile, the first run I did just based off of my own judgment. But then the next few times, like working on a couple more flavors, took it straight to the farmers markets. They let every farmers market let you experiment with new flavors without any problem. Obviously, it has to be safe to consume. But I learned so much from that. Like just from the few couple weekends of data, you can tell like which flavors is going to do well, what people are expecting. So I was going to launch a flavor based on carrot, which I was so, you know, it sounded so cool. Everybody I told, oh, chipotle carrots. Like, yeah, bring it on. But then we tested it in the market and a couple of variations. It turns out that's not the best way to go just because carrots cannot be as creamy and pureed, at least in the jarred format, as other vegetables. So just that was one of the things. The other one was co-packer. So that was just like an expensive mistake, I guess. So again, sought a bunch of guidance from Startup CPG members. At this point, there weren't so many of them. And it was actually through Startup CPG that I found another co-packer in Kentucky that we're currently working with. So I didn't know we had to sign a contract with a co-packer. I was like, oh, what could go wrong?
So much.
So things like that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great advice too, though, is get the feedback when it's still sort of new and fresh and in these like early stages where you haven't thrown really the full weight behind it. And also just ask questions, ask people for help. If something goes wrong, ask for help. As you've been growy, if you will, over the last few years, what sort of has been your strategy of getting growy into people's hands and getting it into stores? And I mean, now you're on both coasts. So what has been your strategy of rolling it out from, you know, just you, Aman, to both coasts and in many customers' hands?
Of course. I think it kind of works differently for different category of products. At least for us, what I've realized is, again, sampling is the best method. But for my product, just because it's a condiment, the repeat rate is super high, but you do have to put money behind demos. It's expensive, but sadly, I think I've spoken to so many other successful condiment company founders, listened to some podcasts. Everybody had to go through the rut of kind of demoing. That's the biggest, at least for us. And then the other things that has worked really well for me is displaying, like end cap displays. Those are also super helpful, doing a scan back and really working closely with the category manager, or even the store managers, if you have the stores in the arm's length. That has done wonders. And Amazon has been pretty good for me as well. Like, for example, California, we get a ton of orders through California on Amazon from California. And that just has sort of created a snowball effect for our launch in California stores, just because I don't know. I mean, it could be wrong, but from looking at, you have that, you're not able to like see aggregate data, but when you go in your Amazon for whoever is on Amazon, you're able to see the location of the buyer. And if you see enough of them, sometimes that gives you like an idea of where your product is actually getting bought from the most. It takes a little while to get that data. But yeah, that's been great. Amazon is with my heavy glass jars. It's not made us any money at all, but it's been a great marketing channel for us. That's what I've seen.
Yeah. So sort of Amazon more is like a brand recognition building situation. Yeah. And when you are doing your demos, do you work with like an outside partner who like runs demos for you, or do you go and personally do these demos yourself?
I mean, I wish I could, but it's just like at this point, I would be spending more money in flights and then we actually end up making anyway. But even that, those demos aren't inexpensive. But what I do that's been really helpful is sharing demos. And a lot of times, if you push a little bit, the stores are also willing to do. Like, for example, with Gelson's, I'm trying really hard to split our demos. That would slash our cost really in half. The in-house team would be able to do it. They have like 27 stores at this point. And it's not possible for me to drive all the, you know, the entire coast of California to do it, even if I went there. So we can do it. Gelson's doesn't allow this with the agencies, but I'm pretty sure whichever store or in whichever area or region you are, there are like at this point so many demo companies. Just ask to split demos, and that way you split your costs, and you know, you get to pick the brand which you're going with. For example, we use crackers and chips anyway, so I just reached out to a couple of cracker brands, like, hey, would you like to share demos? And that way, we both are getting our marketing there. They're like tasting, oh, what kind of cracker is that? And, hey, what kind of dip is that? And so that's been helpful for me.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I think definitely demos are a way I've personally discovered so many fun brands. So I definitely can and see how, though expensive, they make a huge impact. Now that you are on two coasts and lots of stores, are you sort of more focused on the stores you're in, or are you still pushing for further retail expansion?
That's a really great question. And for me, as I said, I'm really treading carefully. I just want to open one more account on the West Coast so we can make use of our distribution center costs and optimize them per unit very nicely. But after that, I think I'm just going to focus more on breadth and kind of like increasing our sell-throughs, just because I've seen, like, you know, I think as any new founder, or unless you're super smart, I'm not. You get into some stores in the beginning and then you don't know what you're doing. We thought like, oh, just getting in the stores and the product would fly off the shelves. Not always that happens. I ended up getting out from a lot of stores in the beginning, which is kind of fine. We didn't even have a good packaging at the time. I don't even know about right now, but that's what I'm going to do at this point. I think a good, some stores in the Mid-Atlantic region where I'm from and some stores in California where actually a lot of consumers are looking for, and then just push for sell-throughs in this increase velocities until I'm actually confident. And it's not even about finances, right? I mean, thankfully, I'm able to make more product even if we launch nationally, but I just don't think we will be able to scale our marketing enough at the point and actually support the stores. I've heard so many horror stories of, you know, greatest founders who've, and everybody has their own journey, right? Who've expanded nationally. And then it turns out, even though they've been in the business for so long, you just have to go through those. Sometimes it's to virality of the marketing.
Imagine this. You get accepted into a new regional chain. Hooray! Now, the race to drive velocity begins, but awareness plays are so expensive. Demos, displays, coupon programs, the list goes on. But what if there was a way to connect with millennial women, some of the most important shoppers out there, to actually go into the store, buy your product, and then post about it to their trusted friends and neighbors? Well, now there is. Meet Hummingbirds, the new platform that connects your brands with real shoppers in a specific city. Hummingbirds lets you set up your campaign, match with the local birds who are interested, and then track the social impact of the campaign. It's such a cool concept to hear about a product from someone from my own community that I know and trust rather than some big-time influencer who might not even be relevant in certain zip codes. To learn more, check out hummingbirds.com/startupcpg, and you can even register for a chance to win a free custom-managed program. The winner will be chosen on June 28th. Terms and conditions apply. Please visit the website for details. Good luck.
So, yeah, through this growth, and you're saying, you know, scaling your marketing, what are some of the like tactics you're using in terms of your marketing? Have you been, you know, using social media or focusing primarily, as you said, on these like in-person events? But how have you been approaching marketing as a small brand?
Yeah, as a small brand, I'm so happy you added that. Again, kind of new into this, but what I've realized is email marketing does a lot for you. Again, being focused on a specific region than going nationally. That's, again, one of the reasons that I want to focus our marketing efforts, even if we currently are launching targeted ads very carefully. But the intention is not just to generate sales out of it, but kind of like do both from the same thing in the way that target that specific region with sales so that people see the ads. And then, like, for example, Philly is a great region for us. We are in a ton of stores in that area. So once someone has tried it, I feel like the conversion rate might be higher. And in-store marketing has been like kind of also really helpful. As I said, demo and displays, again, this forms part of the marketing. Now, I try to focus a lot more on festivities where our product could be relevant. For example, the Memorial Day weekend is coming. So we're trying to like push out some coupons in stores. We've scheduled a lot of demos around that time, displays in some regions. So kind of like occasion, right? These are, you kind of discover products more on occasion. I feel just because nowadays there are so many brands. Once you've liked the product, the use case scenario is kind of pretty much set. So unless they're like an occasion to experiment. And I felt that's been great for us. Trying to partner with gifting agencies and gift box companies. So it helps a lot.
Cool. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm in Philadelphia, actually. Okay. So I saw you guys were in all the DeBruno Brothers, which is a big Philly retailer for those who are not based in Philadelphia. But I'm excited to go check that out here in Philly. Awesome. So yeah, marketing as a small brand is very hard. And sometimes you don't want to throw all your money into these like paid social media ads that you have no idea if they're actually going to go anywhere. So I think your strategy makes a lot of sense. And a lot of times too, it's just trying to see what sticks and what works. So that makes a lot of sense. So sort of thinking more broadly, as you have been growing over these last few years, what has been one of the biggest challenges that you've faced as a founder?
I think Co-Packer was still, I'm working on my COGS. I think COGS has been one of the biggest, again, just because we want to keep the ingredients. I think it's just like a personal preference, I would say, or personal like arrogancy I have about my product. Like, nope, there's no way I'm changing it. At this point, a lot of co-packers have mentioned, and a lot of like food service and R&D people have also mentioned that, oh, you could just go for a processed puree that is like pre-made and that saves us a lot of costs. I don't think that's the way, just because the way I want to present my product, the way that we want to keep, again, the whole idea behind Growy is like kind of keeping that heritage and of my eating habits from back home in India. I want to keep that intact. And I see the difference, right? Whenever people chase the product, they're like, how is this so fresh in a shelf-stable format? Oh, well, that is because we actually use the diced vegetables. We don't use purees. We don't use pastes or anything. So that's, the cogs have been really difficult and kind of like really a big challenge. We're always on a very squeezed margin. I'm trying to move production to Mexico. We'll see how that works. Just because anyway, most of the vegetables, at least for manufacturing, are coming from California and Mexico at that scale. So maybe going to closer to the source might help. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things. And yeah, just kind of figuring out, the other challenge is kind of figuring out, how do you maximize your impact as a bootstrap brand without blowing a lot of money? That's been the other challenge, but kind of in the terms of marketing.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, the bootstrapping brand is such a challenge. And how do you manage having enough inventory and enough product to fill all your retailers, but also have money and not blow through everything? But
I wanted to like give everybody who's, you know, able to this at this point, some techniques and sort of support companies and organizations that I've used and they've been super helpful. Like, for example, we always look at states where, you know, my business is still based out of Georgia. And so Georgia Grown has been a monumental organization for us. They give you a lot of marketing subsidies in the terms of the trade shows that you're going for. And then, so along with Startup CPG's amazing discounts, if you can stack another discount with your state's agricultural organization, they actually end up paying for a lot of your trade show costs. Then SUSTA is another one for the Southeast people. I think for the Northeast, it's NUSTA. And then it's like a consortium of states that have come together to, it's more oriented towards export, but they also give you marketing budgets for national trade shows like National Products Expo. And even to the point that if you're starting to export to Canada or anywhere else, they would pay for the packaging cost of your packaging changes. So like the cost you would pay to a designer, they would even reimburse you. I would highly recommend looking at these, organizations wherever you are.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I love those shout outs. And speaking of trade shows, I was just remembering actually that you guys, Growy Foods, were at Expo West this year. Was that your first time at Expo West? Yeah. How was that? How was your first?
Overwhelming.
Yeah.
So overwhelming. Oh my God. The brands were like so flashy and I wish we were more prepared, but we did our best. But it was crazy. And a lot of, again, having distribution on California was super helpful. A lot of interest, as any other trade show, you have to like the actual conversions happen in the next like 3, 4, 5, 6 months. So we're still to see. It's only been a month since the trade show, but I'm really positive. But with super overwhelming with the number of people, I've only walked, but I was never behind the table. And this was crazy.
Yeah. And how have you been post-expo, and speaking of some of those conversions, have you been in conversations or how have you been sort of trying to approach taking some of those contacts or people you met or had interest from at expo and then turning them into real life conversions?
Of course, I would just share a little bit about my outreach strategy. Everybody has their own. We always, just because, you know, the first week after the expo, everybody's inboxes are slammed through the roof. So what I do is I send an email the same day we met at the expo. So sometimes people come up to me and say, I saw your email. That was quick. It's like, yeah, now you will remember me. And then I kind of give like a little bit of gap, like week to 10 days before I start to outreach again. And, you know, that way I can also gather everything together. And yeah, it's a long game. I think even the outreach is basically just a connection. Sadly for our shows, unlike other industry shows where conversions happen on site, but I think it takes a good 3 months just because the stores that, at least in National Products Expo West, it was the kind of stores we saw were mostly chains, and conversion with them takes a good I would say 3 to 6 months, unless they have an urgent need. So just stay at it. I think at 6 month point mark, if you're feeling like, okay, this is not converting, it's we do let them go. But otherwise, I think don't leave hope unless they explicitly say no.
Yeah.
That's kind of about it.
Absolutely. I've definitely heard that from other brands that it takes a long time. And I too was overwhelmed when I got back from Expo this year. I think slept like 12 hours a night for a minute there. So I think everybody probably appreciates your week window of a break. So that makes a lot of sense. So looking more towards the future, what is coming up for Growy and in these A, retail expansions, but also with the product? And what does the next year or so kind of look like for Growy Foods?
Yeah, a lot of brewing happening backstage. New flavor, kind of a spicy one. Everybody's asked us, like, which one's the most spiciest? I was like, really? I thought, but I guess that's the industry trend too right now, right? With all the chili crisps and chili oil, everybody wants spicy. So one of the new flavors we're working on is going to be a spicy one. And then a new product line in the works too. Within the same realm, don't want to give a lot of details, but hoping that it's something. What I try to do as a brand is, you know, at least have some uniqueness in the product. Like, we don't want to be, you know, nothing against the beverage brands, but I don't want to be another like ready to drink, like functional soda or those kind of things. So just I look at different product categories. What unique can I bring from other cultures? I've traveled a lot. So, you know, other countries and unique ingredients, especially as a plant-based brand and being from India, I want to experiment so much with the lentils that I've grown up eating. You know, puree a lentil into a dip. Why wouldn't you have like a high protein lentil dip at some point when it's 100% natural? It's like 20 grams of protein. There, I gave it away a little bit.
We won't tell. Yeah, that sounds delicious. I love all things lentils. So I am very excited for that product. That's not totally not happening. But yeah, very exciting to have some new products. And how has the development process been for those? Has it been like equally as sort of like long and arduous as it was the first time? Or do you feel like it's been a little bit easier this time around?
Process is easier, but I would say it's longer and more focused now. I didn't really know anything when I started. So if it tasted great, sure. But now that I know so much, it's actually taking longer because we know what we want to optimize from the get-go and not face the same challenges and kind of improve way more on texture. Even look at our cogs this time, unlike last time. So it's taking a little longer. And then the new product development for the new product line, I think that's a whole different challenge. Just because once you have a set of products that are doing great, people are liking it, like your expectations kind of only go up from there. So a little longer, more complicated, but we also have more experience. So yeah.
Yeah, that's all very exciting. Again, in that vein a little bit, what's something that as you are pushing forward, all very exciting things and also very challenging things, what's a moment or a feeling that sort of helps you keep going when things are challenging or things take longer than you were expecting them to? What sort of helps you keep going and know that this is worth the challenge?
Well, immediate solution is sign up for farmers markets. Nothing helps you more than customer appreciation. If you see people are actually happy, they're buying, they're paying like $9, $10 for like a 12-ounce jar at the farmers markets and without even asking for, I don't know, like without a hitch, that motivates you a lot. Meeting and coming to all the trade shows, meeting with fellow founders. Actually, from Expo West, you know, at this point, we've all been to the same trade shows. So, I mean, I have like a little community of all the startup CPG friends. We just all were discussing like how every week each of us kind of feels like, oh man, we should just shut down the business because I don't know how it's going to do. I don't know how much money it's going to burn. But speaking with friends and knowing that this industry is this way and it's hard, but also seeing like when you actually make it, where can this take you? So both sides are super empowering. And that's why I always try to make an effort to come to these trade shows at this point and every single one of them. That's kind of my thing about getting motivated.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, just talking to other people, hearing other people's stories, knowing you're not alone, and then also seeing people appreciate your product is so useful. My last sort of question is just what piece of advice would you give to a listener who is where you were a few years ago when you were just starting Growy. And they were coming to you and they were saying, Aman, I really want to start a brand. What should I do? What advice would you give them? And I know that's a big question, but what would you say?
Talk to a lot of more people. I feel like I did less, even though I thought I did enough. But talk to a lot of people and make a lot of people taste your products. Nothing triumphs taste in the food industry, no matter how much like funding we have, even if you're a bootstrap or even if you're a funded brand. Like if your product doesn't taste too good, nothing's going to help you on the shelf. We're going to get on. If you have money, you're probably going to get on with that money and as in kind of pay to play model. If it doesn't taste great, it's not going to stick. So just once you know your product tastes good, nothing can stop. Then it's all about just tweaking, right? So talk to a lot of people, make your actual product taste great. And then there you go. You have the recipe.
Yeah. And that is how you become successful. So this is so much fun, Aman. Where can people find Growy if they want to try it?
Of course, if you're listening from California, especially LA, San Diego, we are in Gelson's. We just got in there. So if you're listening, please support us. And that would be awesome. Then Amazon. And as Grace already said, the Brono is in the Philly area. Kimberton Whole Foods in the Philly area. And our website. If you love us too much, then please come by.
Yes.
We'll include some goodies.
I love it. And how can the Startup CPG community support you beyond going to all your stores and buying every single jar of Growy foods?
Yeah, whenever you see a jar on the shelf, if you could just shoot me a photo, I think it takes a second. That helps without, again, having a lot of foot on the floor, having a lot of merchandising team people or a big budget to do the marketing. If friends send pictures of her product, I know how its product, what's it priced at, how it's placed in the store. You know, just a simple click.
I love that. That's wonderful and probably very exciting too to get to see your product in all the different stores. Well, this was so much fun, Aman. Everybody should check out Growy Foods on their website or on Instagram or in any of their retail locations, or just message Aman on our Startup CPG Slack. I'm sure he would love to chat with you. But yeah, thanks for listening and thanks for talking, Aman.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast today, it would really help us out if you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I am Daniel Scharf. I'm the host and founder of Startup CPG. Please feel free to reach out or add me on LinkedIn. If you're a potential sponsor that would like to appear on the podcast, please email partnerships@startupcpg.com. And reminder to all of you out there, we would love to have you join the community. You can sign up at our website, startupcpg.com, to learn about our webinars, events, and Slack channel. If you enjoyed today's music, you can check out my band. It's the Super Fantastics on Spotify Music. On behalf of the entire Startup CPG team, thank you so much for listening and your support. See you next time.